Hey, Vince, we don't know how to fade out songs.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to 8 Pits. I'm your host, Brandon Minnick, and with me is PJ Metz.
That's right.
Just loving the new intro music.
Oh, I forgot about that drum fill in the middle. It just, everything kept going and goes, and I was like, oh yeah, that's good.
It's really good. So to fill everybody in, which you can't see because we're just chatting about it behind the scenes, we're going, hey, does anybody remember how long this video is? And we're going, I think it's 2 minutes. And then 2 minutes passes, 2 minutes, 15 seconds passes. Yep. It's like, maybe it's 3 minutes. And then PJ literally goes, I hope it fades out. I forget how it ends. And then
turns out
we're live.
Oh, I got to put that thing in a music editor and actually have it fade out. Sorry for the abrupt. It surprised me because I was in a document making sure we had some stuff ready and the music cut. And I went, I'm going to be on the air soon. I have to be looking at the camera.
But we did it. We're back.
Listen, they said it couldn't be done. And they've got to stop saying it because we keep doing it. And in defiance of all of the naysayers that this show has. Why are there so many naysayers, Brandon?
Just all the haters. Got to prove them wrong. PJ, how is your week?
Man, it's been a good week so far, and it's about to get better. Because tonight, I leave for Washington, D.C. for a education conference because I am the education evangelist at GitLab. Like, that's my job. And my manager and I are finally going to our first education conference to talk to people about GitLab and what we can do for education. I'm running a workshop for the first time, not virtual. And even the virtual one I did, it was just like me and like 13 people. And I was like, this is how you use GitLab. But this is for something with code. And it's complicated and a little scary. But my boss and I and a great intern named Alejandro Rusi, who came and worked at GitLab through the Google Summer of Code program, he created this awesome thing called Courseware as Code. And it's basically a way to use GitLab in your classroom. Your students get familiar with the ideas of DevOps. Your students get familiar with GitLab. And you've got some great content to help fill in your class. Because, Brandon, I feel like you can talk to this. When you're majoring in computer science, you don't always get the stuff that's actually happening on the job. And that's what we're hoping to help with.
Oh, gosh. Yes, I can absolutely vouch to that. And if you're watching this and you're currently going through your computer science major, great. Stick with it. I promise it's good stuff. But yeah, computer science in schools or colleges specifically focuses a lot on theory. And so you'll know what a binary tree is and you'll know how to sort an array with a bubble sort. But then you get to your first job.
Can you do a pull request?
Right. And they're like, oh, yeah, just you know, open up a PR. And you're just like, what? And they're like, yeah, just commit that. What?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you've never written code on the same code base with multiple people, have you? There's this thing called Git. And then you start learning.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny because I have such a different route to become a person working in tech. And when you were helping teach me, you were like, so you need to know Git and you need to know this and you need to understand. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I realized that that's not necessarily the same education that you're getting with a degree. And the degree, like you said, is important. You have talked about some amazing stuff with computers that just goes way above my head. But it's not the same as on-the-job training. And we're looking to help professors who want to give students more real-world experience to be able to give that. So yeah, conference tomorrow. Right. Like, and it's cold in DC. The Hawaiian shirt won't fly there, you know?
And what's it called again?
EdSigCon and Connoisseur. And I think I have the link if I'm smart and know how to copy a link. You know me, I sometimes edit songs to just end in the middle of it. It's pretty exciting. It's at a hotel. It's technically in Virginia in Crystal City. But huge conference, lots of great educators from all over America and the world, and specifically with a focus on educational technology and technology education, really. So it's great for me and my boss. It's great for me. I'm getting more experience, and I'm going to meet a lot of great people there. So that's what's going on. What's going on with you, Brandon?
Love it. Yeah, I'll go quick because, you know, we've got an awesome guest this week and want to get to him as soon as possible. But I want to shout out something we're doing at Microsoft called .NET Conf. Drop the link for that here in the comments as well. If you are a .NET developer, this is like Christmas, because every year around this time frame, so early November, Microsoft hosts .NET Conf. It's November 9th specifically. This year.
Listen, that's a hard word.
Specifically. So what it is Microsoft is releasing the new version of .NET. So .NET 6 is finally going to what we call GAs, hit general availability. It's been in preview for months. I've been using it and playing around with it, but saving my production apps until GA comes. And so, yeah, .NET 6 is coming. With that comes C# 10. We also get the .NET MAUIs coming with that. And so there's all sorts of goodies. If you don't know what any of those words mean, that's okay too. Check out .NET Conf. .net. Mm-hmm. And you can join us next Tuesday on November 9th.
Yeah. And I know I'm going to throw the link up there for you real quick. You're also working on the Xamarin toolkit, and that's very important. So that as well.
Xamarin Community Toolkit. So all my Xamarin developers out there, we just pushed out release version 1.3 minutes ago, hours ago, today. So this is hot off the presses. Folks have been asking about when we're going to bump this release, and we had one more pull request we wanted to add in. So there's a cool new feature that makes brings in what we call compound animations. So basically animations that are done for you. And so it makes it really easy to add it into your apps. Plus, we bumped the Xamarin Forms dependency so that you're no longer locked into a specific version of Xamarin Forms. I know a couple of folks had complaints with that, and I totally get it. I agree. So we fixed it. So check out version 1.3 of the Xamarin Community Toolkit today.
That's right. So we've got Soft Taco Raider saying two of my favorite people. Well, you're about to have a third favorite person, Soft Taco Raider. Our guest today is a guest who's been on the show before, is one that both Brandon and I have like in real life ties to through school or through music and through a host of things, and I'm very excited to reintroduce to all of the people here watching and listening later on. Please welcome from Auth0, Sam Julian.
Sam, welcome to
I need
show.
A reggae horn sound effect because I think like I don't have it, and I think I need that.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I forgot in a pre-show to clarify my last name is pronounced Julene. I'm trying to get better.
Julene!
At that.
That's on my fault. No, so I'll see you guys.
I keep forgetting. Oh, and then PJ. That's what PJ happens. PJ felt so bad about that he left the show. Okay, now he's back.
Julene, no, I'm sorry. I usually am very big on making sure the names are right.
No, it's followed me my entire life. I just have to get better about speaking up about it. But yeah,
I should have let Brandon do the introduction, actually.
Brandon probably didn't remember either.
I remember Sam. So, Sam, thanks so much for joining us again. For anybody who missed the last show, first, pause this. Go check it out. Sam had an amazing interview on a previous episode of 8-Bits. They can find it on 8bits.tv. But Sam, tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah. I am the director of developer relations at Auth0, which basically means I'm in charge of all things DevRel. So events, sponsorships, ambassadors program. Under me is Anna Sidre, who's the manager. She's going to be the international manager eventually. But right now she's managing the whole team. We've got a great thing going over there. So I really love it. I've been at Auth0 for 3 years. I've had quite a journey in developer relations and developer advocacy. I'm a self-taught developer. We talked about that on the last show, but I'm a self-taught developer. And that's me in a nutshell. I also write a weekly newsletter called Developer Micro Skills that's all about practical ways to improve as a developer and developer advocate. So I send that out every week. And I've also written a book called Getting Started in Developer Relations. I'm really passionate about getting new people into developer relations and then also training them to be successful. So yeah, that's me.
Fantastic.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah, Sam, you were once the only person at the Auth0 developer relations team. Is that right?
No, I was never the only person. I started on the content team and then moved over to the developer relations team. We've always had at least a handful of people around the world on the team. We've got Sam Bellin in Belgium. We've got Ben Decry in Australia. We've got Jess Temporal in Brazil. We've got Tyler Clark in the U.S. Now I'm going to miss somebody and they're going to hate me. Oh,
no. Don't know who rattle off everybody are.
In one. Rattle off everybody in one go. But yeah, we've got a lot of people on the team.
That's
all
a
over
great
the world.
Team. That's yeah. a good size too. A lot of places their developer relations team is just getting started, or, you know, there's like a few people. And it feels like you've had a good hand in making this team what it is. I mean, obviously, as director, you're certainly going to have a hand in it going forward. And again, like you said earlier, you literally wrote the book on getting into developer relations. So it's nebulous. If you ask someone what DevRel is, it's a nebulous answer almost every time. So it'd be cool to get a definite answer on what it is from the authority. And this is the definition we're going to use going forward, y'all. But how do you define like DevRel and developer relations, Sam? Like, what do you consider it to be?
I mean, I look at developer relations, I mean, at its simplest, most fundamental, developer relations is basically being the mediator between the users or potential users of a software product and then the company. I mean, and so dev advocates, developer advocates, basically their job is to listen to the developer community, interact with the developer community, and then pass that back to the company and advocate for developers' best interest. And that looks really different depending on, I mean, there's like a million different ways that you can accomplish that. Sometimes it's through events like conferences and meetups. Sometimes it's through product feedback. Like you'll have a you know, let's say you get feedback on an SDK that your company uses and you pass that back to the product team. Sometimes it's through programs like ambassador programs or champion programs, things like that. Sometimes it's through community forums. There's a myriad ways to splice and dice whatever being the advocate for developers in your company looks like. But that's one of the things that's so exciting about it as a field, is that there's just so many different incarnations of developer relations and so many different ways that you can be creative. And that's what I really love about it. I love that it's a combination of being creative, but then also having an impact on a business. And it's a great field.
Absolutely.
Right on.
And Sam, I think one of the best things about this role is we're not just focusing on technical skills. And I think this is really where you shine. You found that something that has been often overlooked in just the tech field in general is that we're people too. Somehow we miss that after, you know, decades of this field being around, but you're able to focus on mental well-being, soft skills, and that's really where I think the community looks up to you. And so I'm curious, how did you get into that niche? And it seems obvious now that, of course, we need to worry about this, but how did you essentially discover this?
That's a good question. I don't know if anybody's ever asked me that before. Like, it's kind of... I kind of just naturally started doing it because I care a lot about that stuff. And I think I just kind of noticed that there was somewhat of a gap in that. Like I'm not by any means like the first person to ever talk about this stuff. There's tons of people who do, but I think there's been a little bit of a gap of people being willing to talk about like the more human side of things. One of the reasons for me that I'm so passionate about this is like DevRel is sort of a double-edged sword. There's a lot of really good stuff about it. Like it can be a really exciting job. Like you get to travel normally. I mean, it's a little different right now, but you get to travel, you get to have a lot of visibility, you get to grow your career a lot, that kind of thing. But at the same time, there's also a high risk to it. It's really easy to get taken advantage of in a DevRel job, like, and just sort of run into the ground. Like you can, because it's so exciting and there's so much travel and so many opportunities, if you don't work at a company that really values you and your health and your well-being, it's very easy to just sort of become like a corporate, like, just zombie that just has to like pump out content and speak at events and that's exhausting. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into events and content and that kind of thing. And if you don't know that that's not okay, then it's easy to just sort of be like, oh, well, I guess this is just the way it is. Like, this is just the job and I just need to try harder and I just need to like suck it up and like not complain and that kind of thing. And like, so I've been really passionate about, I don't think it's enough to just try to get more people into the field. I think we have to be sure that we're also helping them understand like how to navigate those kinds of situations and how to speak up for your health and well-being and also just understanding that in the DevRel game, like you are the asset, like you're the prize, like companies need you more than you need them. And I know that's probably really dangerous for me to say as a director of developer relations, but it's true. I mean, it's honestly true. Like they're like, because dev advocates, not to like put people too much up on a pedestal, but like that bridge between the developer community and the company is incredibly valuable. And it's a high stakes game, right? Like you're putting your reputation on the line for a company and that's a big ask, you know? And so I think it's just about kind of the power dynamics of knowing that like you have a lot of value that you're bringing to the table. And so you don't need to be in a situation where you're being like treated badly or taken advantage of or something like that. And that's really where it all boils down to. And I think it kind of started with me when I was running the ambassadors program and I was talking a lot to aspiring dev advocates. And then I started managing dev advocates. Then I started managing managers of dev advocates. And so just like seeing the themes there and like, I'm really lucky. I've gotten taught a lot of those like principles and a lot of those skills of how to like stand up to bosses and how to negotiate and that kind of thing, just through a variety of life experiences and that kind of thing. And so I'm really passionate about paying that forward and teaching people who didn't get that, you know, didn't grow up being taught that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. That's so important. You talked a lot about the idea that developer relations and people who work in DevRel are this unique and important bridge. And I feel like we occupy a very specific space that not just anyone can come in and fill. Every person in DevRel that I've met is a personality and is a person that is representing a company as opposed to, oh, I am just a team member of this company. And so it's this very unique position where like, you need to be able to go out and be a face. And you also need to have the skills to back it up because developers are not going to want to pay attention if you don't have that skill and knowledge that they need in order to interact with the product. So, I mean, I want to say I'm special and unique because that's been my MO my entire life. But I think you're right that this is a very important position and that you're valuable. If a company's not putting the time into its developer relations group, then they're just going to think it's a hammer that they can throw at everything. Like, oh, go over here and talk to these people. Oh, now go, we need you to do a demo. And oh, make sure you're doing this and make a lot of content. And that's not being used correctly. So it's nice to hear that, it, like, you know, as a director, you understand that it's a fine tool rather than like a big smashy tool that just goes after everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know like some people might hear me say some of those things and think that I'm kind of playing into this whole like dev advocates or just internet celebrity kind of thing. And like, that's not really what I'm saying. I'm more saying, mm-hmm. you know, like, it's just that, for example, I've had dev advocates message me and be like, hey, my company is saying that like, I'm not allowed to use my Twitter for personal stuff, you know, like, or I'm not allowed to create content on my personal site unless it relates back to the company and things like that. And, you know, like, those are the kinds of things like, and this person didn't really know. I mean, you're in a really awkward position then, like, cause it's your job and like your boss and mm-hmm. like, what are you supposed to do in that situation? You know, like, but you know, and so I think having somebody tell them like, that's like not okay. Like the company doesn't own you, you know, you can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Work out whatever relationship is appropriate as far as like what hours you're spending and what, you know, like, you know, yeah, maybe you don't work on your personal stuff during your 40 hours of work or whatever, but like
right.
saying that you can't publish on your own blog or make your own videos or that kind of thing is like ludicrous. You know, that's part of what makes a developer advocate valuable, is they're building their personal brand and all that stuff. So
absolutely. Yeah,
those are the absolutely. Kinds of things that I worry about, you know.
You never would have gotten Pied Piper if Richard hadn't been allowed to work on his own personal project on his own time. And that's from Silicon Valley, which I just started watching, and I understand a lot better now, because when I first tried to watch it when it came out, I was just confused.
That's funny.
Oh. So Sam, PJ touched on something in the intro that we have this strange connection between all of us. So for those that don't know, Sam and I actually went to high school together. So we go way back, and we were also part of we're percussionists. We played on the drum line, the marching band, and the orchestral pit. Sam's still one of the best orchestral percussionists I've ever had the pleasure of playing with. He's incredible. And then we all went to University of Florida together, where but we didn't really know that.
Yeah, no clue.
Because Sam left high school before me, so we kind of lost touch. But Sam, in college, you didn't do anything with tech. What actually?
Not officially, no.
And so some people might be surprised to learn, but what was it that actually inspired you to make your way into technology and leaving behind, you know, what your degree is in and what you studied in college and spent all that money and student loans on?
Yeah, I definitely have a roundabout way into tech. I actually have been into web development since I was about 12 years old. I started learning HTML. I had this cousin that was an engineer and kind of pointed me in the right direction. But you know, this was like 1999 or 2000 or something. So there was no YouTube or Codecademy or Treehouse or like any of those places. So I actually just like got books from the library, and like there were minimal tutorials online. I did a lot of just like view source and copy paste. And so I started learning that stuff when I was young, and I really wanted to become a computer programmer. And I went to UF and I started as a computer science major, and then had to take like three different levels of calculus and physics and a bunch of other things, and was like, I don't really want to do this. I just want to learn to code. And that I probably made a bad decision there, like getting out of computer science, but I ended up going into liberal arts. And
it sure seems to have worked out for you so far, Sam.
I mean, I guess it did. It did work out. I feel a little, I always kind of regret, because it's like, if I just stuck with those first couple of years, I could have, my life trajectory would have been really different. But I guess, you know, I wouldn't have been where I'm at, I guess. So But anyway, long story short, like I ended up getting a degree in religion, which is not a theology degree. It's basically a history and sociology degree. And I was going to become an academic and all of that stuff. And so that's why I have a real interest in like research and data and stuff like that. But that didn't pan out either, because it turns out being a religion major in an economic recession in 2008 and 2009 is not really a great way to be able to afford life. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of stumbled my way into finance. I was really just trying to like find something to be able to get a job and like pay the bills and that kind of stuff. And I ended up doing financial sales and operations and stuff like that for about 5 years. I got really disillusioned really quickly in that. I sort of went into that as an idealistic 20 something being like, I'm going to change the world and like help everybody with their money. And then like, I got into it and it was like, oh, actually I'm just going to like manage a bunch of wealthy people's money. And like that wasn't really what I wanted. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, that really wasn't what I wanted. And I was like studying for this really complex brokerage license and stuff. And I was just like doing a risk analysis in my mind, thinking like, so I'm just going to keep getting like, I'm going to take more and more responsibility and like not really get that much out of this. Like I wasn't really into it. And at the brokerage I worked for, we had a software department. They, and sort of the claim to fame of that brokerage was that they wrote their own trading platform. And so I was able to talk with that team and just sort of be like, hey, do you have any advice for me of like going back into development? And I had always thought that you had to have a college degree in computer science in order to become a developer. Like this era that we're in now, where you see so many self-taught developers and non-traditional backgrounds and stuff, that didn't exist in that time period. You know, there really wasn't that much exposure. I mean, YouTube mm-hmm. was only created in 2006, you know, and that was just sort of getting started, and social media was only just starting to take off. I mean, that sounds like the Jurassic period, but like, honestly, like I didn't know any self-taught developers. And so I was asking around to the company, and it turned out that like one of the lead architects had never finished college or anything, you know, and I was like totally shocked. Like I had no idea. He was like, I was a linguistics major and I dropped out, like, you know, like I've been coding for 15 years now, you know, like, and that guy is now a principal architect at a giant financial company, you know, like,
yeah.
So that really inspired me. And I was like, oh, okay. And they sent me a bunch of resources and really, really helped me kind of figure out the self-taught path. I did a lot of Pluralsight courses, I learned all my first courses were K. Scott Allen's C# courses, rest in peace. And so, went down that road and then ended up getting my first job in Portland and moving out to Portland to do jQuery and SQL. And then eventually found my way into the Angular community, and then found a way into DevRel through that. I don't know how much detail to get into. I feel like I'm rambling at this point. But there's just,
I mean, that's sort of like roundabout.
I packed a lot in like 8 years. So
you were into tech, and then you like were, oh, I'm not going to be able to do that. I need calculus. I'm done. And then finding your way back in is one of the more interesting paths I've seen of like feeling like you would like to do it, getting sort of like the, not like jitters, but seeing what's expected and feeling like that's not what I was hoping it would be, but then finding your way back eventually. And one of the things that you said during that story, I think was really important, because it took seeing that someone else was able to do it to know that you could do it as well. And I think that's what's so important about people with non-traditional backgrounds, is seeing other people who have done it. And as more people do that and become visible, that increases the amount of people who've seen it. So you're absolutely right that nowadays there's almost this explosion of non-traditional backgrounds, self-taught. I'm saying that I'm community taught, because I feel like that is encompassing what Brandon and Chloe and all the people that I've met have done for me, is, yeah, I took an online course and I learned to code, but so much of what I learned was from interacting with the community. And that's only possible because there is this welcoming nature to it now. And there is a sort of like embracing of non-traditional backgrounds now. And it needs to be much better in many places, but I do think that it's much better than it would have been in, you know, 2009, 2010, when we're talking about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. No, I like that phrase too. I philosophically want to remember to not say self-taught developer, and I keep.
I feel like you're pretty self-taught from what you've said. Like there's people that helped you, but like you had to go and find resources that at a time did not exist. I fell on like 8 different online things, and like there were what are they called? Not like Hackbrite and like these I almost said bootstraps, boot camps. Like there's so much available now that like. I accidentally started doing it. You know, you had this intention and it was a different time. So don't discount it. But like, yeah, if you want to start saying community taught, I took it from someone else.
Yeah. I mean, I would say yes and no. I mean, there is one of the reasons that I feel so like ridiculously lucky and I'm so motivated to help other people is like, I did that architect that I mentioned, like, he really made a difference in my career because he showed me the path, you know, like I didn't know it was possible. And then I didn't know how to actually get there. And he like took a lot of time to teach me. Like, I mean, he didn't like get a blackboard out and start teaching me how to code.
Like, you're like with a piece of slate and chalk.
Yeah. Like it wasn't like that, but like he did do like code reviews with me and he like pointed me in the right direction and he checked in on me and that kind of thing. And like, not everybody has that. And I feel really, really lucky that I did. And I try to kind of virtually be that person for other people through my newsletter and my writings and stuff like that is like having somebody to just like sit you down and be like, hey, here's the game that you're about to try to play and here's how you win it. And like, here's how you can succeed and all that. That really motivates me because I feel like if I didn't have him kind of giving me some pointers and stuff, like, I don't know if I would have ever, because I didn't come from like, I didn't have any like real like connections or family members or anything like that. One cousin that I mentioned, I mean, he was like 15 years older than me. We weren't like close or anything. Like that was ancient history, you know, like that wasn't anything. Whereas I know some people, like they have like parents or siblings or something who are like in tech or like in related fields and they might have a little bit better understanding. This was all completely different to me. I had no idea how the tech industry worked or like what it was. And so having somebody show that to me was like really valuable because I think I would have just sort of spun my wheels for a long time and then never actually figured out how to actually get a job. You know?
Yeah. Well, not knowing where to go next, what to do is really important. I want to bring up your developermicroskills.com website so we can show it off a little bit, but like things like how to self-mentor, how to ask for feedback, how to beat feeling overwhelmed, how to finish what you start. These are like when you don't know where to go, you can just stop and spin your wheels and then eventually you stop hitting the gas and then you fall off. So to have 1,524 people who have subscribed to your newsletter, that's people that you're reaching, you know, that's fantastic. And like, there's someone out there that's going to be like, well, I wouldn't have gotten where I am today without Sam Jaleen's like website, you know, like it's very helpful. It's very, you're doing it. Like you're that guy. You're that architect now.
And Sam, I love that you call it a game. Cause I use the same term. Cause I'll tell people you have to play the game. And what I'd love to dive deeper in this. Cause I know what I mean by that is, you know, when we're growing up and we're kids, we're kind of told, you know, work hard and you'll succeed. And your boss will reward you. And that's how you get a raise. It's just, you just got to work really hard. And then it wasn't until I had an amazing mentor at my first job that she explained to me how things actually work there. It's like, well, if you actually want to get promoted, then the best thing to do is to look at what's expected of the level above you and operate at that level. So meet the expectations before you ask for the job because you've already proven you can do the job. And then she showed me on her side, like, here's how promotions work at the company. We all get in a room together and we basically have to fight for you to get that promotion. So she's the one that taught me how to, you know, record all of my accomplishments, condense those down into her thing was it should all fit on one PowerPoint slide. The reasons why, and they should be very impactful. They should be tangible. And to me, that's like, that's part of the game. And so whenever I mentor folks, especially now that I'm at Microsoft and have been here for a couple of years and I know how all the systems work, it's really easy to break that down. And you can say, okay, well, we have to do this, this, and this, and then we can get rewarded and get that promotion. Right. It's not just, well, I worked really hard and I put in 80 hours a week. And it's like, because at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, everybody's good at their job. That's why they have the job. and so, I was curious. That's kind of what I mean when I say play the game. how do you define the game yourself, Sam?
So I've been a big strategy game fan my entire life. Any and every type of strategy game. I mean, growing up in the 90s, I was really into all of the different like Super Nintendo RPGs, like all of the Zeldas and all of the Chrono Trigger and all of
those. Best game of all time. That's the official 8-Bits podcast policy. Don't at us. Thank you.
So, I mean, I kind of look at it as a strategy for playing a game. And I think that one of the first times I really put this together was with the conference speaking and learning that is a game. Like, so I kind of thought that the way it worked was you just were like, you'd be like a really incredible engineer, and then somebody would just fall down from the sky and invite you to speak at a conference because you were just the best developer that's ever existed, you know, and they would just pluck you out and put you on stage.
You are the chosen one.
Yeah. And so I was very discouraged by that, 'cause I was like, I'm not like the best engineer that has ever existed. And like, how am I going to do this? And then, you know, slowly I realized that there's actually that the speaking, the becoming a speaker is a lot more of like, it's more akin to a sales game than it is an engineering game. Like, you're trying to persuade the conference speakers that you're going to be a win-win for both the audience and for the conference. And it's going to help you in the process. You know, and there's an art to like writing a good proposal. And you want to like apply to a bunch of different ones and play the odds. And then that's just when you're first getting started. And then how you continue on that is by building relationships, and you get to know organizers. And then it's, you know, it comes time around for them to find conferences. There's pros and cons to this. I'm not saying that this is a 100% like ethical and just, and like, this is the perfect system, but it is there is a game there that is being played. And the only way we can make it more ethical and more just is if we teach more people how to play it. And
absolutely.
So that's where I started kind of putting that together, was like, oh, okay, there's sort of an invisible game being played around me about this, like speaking at conferences thing. And it's not the best engineers. It's the people who know how to play this game. And that's what I really like. I love to learn games and then win them and then teach other people how to win them. You know, that's like my MO. So that's sort of the path that I was on, was I learned that. And then as I started to teach other people, I was like, I like teaching other people to do this more than I like doing it myself. You know, it brings me a lot more joy to see like a junior developer become like international speaker than it does. Like, I don't, for me, it's like, that's fun, but like, it's not that I'm not a very like ego driven person. I don't like to be the center of attention and stuff. So I get a lot of joy out of helping other people do that, you know?
I think that's such a cool distinction to make too, where it's like I, you know, you've given talks, you still do a bunch of outreach, but you enjoy helping other people get there more. And I feel like that means being director is kind of a great situation for you, because you're in this position where you're now, your main focus at work is assisting other people in doing better and doing more. You've mentioned twice now the ambassador program from AuthZero. I'd love to hear more about what that is and what that's like and what that does. And talk a little shop real quick. Tell us about the AuthZero ambassador program.
Sure. Yeah. I was sitting here realizing that I am a terrible developer marketer, because I'm sitting here wearing a Hashnode shirt. Because I'm actually traveling to I'm traveling to Cascadia JS in about 2 hours. And this is a very comfortable travel shirt. And it occurred to me that I should be wearing an AuthZero ambassador shirt. So do as I say and not as I do, I guess. But the ambassadors program is awesome. It's our like global, basically kind of an extended DevRel program. Basically, we teach people developer relations by way of AuthZero. So we have people join the program. Usually they're, I mean, this is just sort of the average profile is tends to be people who are like 3 to 5 years into their developer career. And they're trying to figure out if they want to go into developer relations or if they just want to like grow their personal brand. That's not to say we have people all over the spectrum as far as like experience and stuff, but that tends to be, it's a lot of people who are interested in getting into developer advocacy. So basically what we do is, they create content that uses AuthZero, like conference talks or blog articles or workshops or whatever else. And we give them a bunch of different perks in exchange. Like in the before times, and hopefully we'll resume this before too long, knock on wood, we gave travel support. So if somebody was going to go speak at a conference about something related to identity and security, then we would foot the bill for their airfare and hotel. I'm hoping we can start that back up again soon. But aside from that, we also have like swag that's specific to the ambassadors program. We have trainings. We have we can get them access to like beta features or you know, like last year we, or was it earlier this year? Who even knows anymore? We launched the AuthZero CLI, and so we had a group of ambassadors do a bunch of testing on the CLI before it was launched. And it was awesome because they gave a bunch of feedback about like running it on Windows, running it on Linux. And so it's a great program because it's a platform for people to grow their careers. It's a lot of fun. And we have like 160, I think, is where we're at right now, 170, somewhere in that around the world. I think somewhere around 70 different countries. This is our beautiful new homepage that we launched.
It's real pretty.
Earlier this year. Yeah, we got some custom illustrations done, and I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to our program coordinator, Christy, who now basically runs this program. She basically took it over from me, and she's done an amazing job with it. And she's sort of an unsung hero because she's not a dev advocate that you see giving talks at conferences and stuff, but she's an absolutely critical part of this team, and she's done some really, really amazing work growing the program and stuff like that. So definitely if you're interested in getting into developer advocacy or just learning about giving talks and making content and stuff like that to grow your career, definitely check out the ambassadors program. Yeah, that's my sales pitch. Yeah.
We're gonna come back and talk more about Sam and about AuthZero and a bunch of great stuff after a real quick 30-second ad break. And it's good. Hi, if you're hearing my voice, that means you've been listening to or watching 8-Bits with Brandon and PJ. And we're here to talk to you about your product and how it can help you in your life by do whatever your product does. So if you're an avid listener of the show or you watch us on Twitch, then you'll know that your product is right for you. Really, I just can't believe how handsome that guy is. Like, I can't get over what a good-looking fellow in a pineapple Hawaiian shirt he is. Please, we want to change that ad. We don't want it to just be me talking about how your ad can be here. So yeah, you can email us hello@8bits.tv. That's correct, right? Hello@8bits.tv.
Yep.
Yeah, email us at hello@8bits.tv. Tell us, hey, I want to put an ad space on there. I see that you guys have millions of viewers. That's false advertising. I can't say that. You guys have viewers, and we want to reach those viewers. So contact us, and we'd love to get you on here.
Please do. And so, Sam, there's one thing that we haven't touched on exactly yet, but you have a book called Guide to Tiny Experiments. Yes. And it's... I do feel a little attacked reading that. Why is it so hard to finish what we start? Why do we tend to jump from shiny thing to shiny thing? And that's what this book is all about, helping you finish those projects. But I can't help wondering, this seems to have a lot of parallels to the stories you were just telling us, where I wanted to learn more about this and then I did it. And I wanted to become a conference speaker and then I did it. Are these the life lessons of Sam Julien? What inspired this book?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, I noticed a few different themes in over these last few years. One of them was that sometimes emotionally I would feel like I needed a massive change or a massive like endeavor. And then if I ever got myself to get started, I would notice that a lot of the payoff would come like a lot sooner than I realized. I thought that I needed to like get a totally different job or like completely change my life or something like that. And often it was the smaller day-to-day things that actually made a difference. And I tell this to people all the time who are interested in DevRel, because sometimes people genuinely do want to become a developer advocate. They want to do it as a job, but often it's because they want to travel or speak at conferences or just kind of grow their career and stuff like that. And that's all wonderful. But I tell people, like, you can do that without being a developer advocate. Like, don't think about like, oh, I've got to totally change my career and become a developer advocate. Just start speaking at a couple of meetups, like run an experiment and do a couple of meetups, try to get your first conference talk and see what you think. And you might do a couple of those and be like, all right, I'm good. You know, I did this and like, I it's fine. Or you might be like, no, I want to do this full time. I just think the tiny experiments approach is like, just do iterative things to where you can start building up like quick wins and like building your confidence. And then you'll be surprised at how big of a payoff there is in just those little things. And you'll get a lot more clarity around the big picture life goals that you're trying to accomplish. You know what I mean?
That's great, great points. Like the idea of doing these tinier things and using that to try, because so many people are afraid to just go and try sometimes because worried about failure, you're going to start it and then you're not going to finish. And to have a framework available that you can follow that helps you try the new thing and do it in smaller versions, those iterations really, really help people to level themselves up. And again, it's like you said, you can experiment a little and then be like, ah, that wasn't quite for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Anytime you try something, there's kind of three possible outcomes. You're either going to love it and it's going to go really well, or you're going to hate it and it's not going to go well at all, or it's just going to be kind of a learning experience where you're like, okay, well, that was a thing that I did and I didn't really like it. So it's better to have those experiences with like starting small and like do something that is low risk and give things a try. And then you can double down on what is working and get rid of the stuff that is not working, you know? Yeah. Like I have a lot of people come to me about like, they want to do a video course, right? And they want to do the complete guide to Next.js, you know, they want to do like a 200 video like course, you know, and they've never done any video courses before, you know, and it's like, and usually my response is like, okay, send me the first 5 videos next week. And like 90% of them don't do it, you know? And it's like, well, that's why, because you're trying to do this whole giant thing. And when you look at it and you're really overwhelmed and you're like, never mind, I'm not going to do that. Like, instead, it'd be better to just say, I'm going to do a 5 video mini course on like styling in Next.js and then see how that goes, you know? And maybe it goes well, maybe it doesn't, but you're going to learn more skills and all of that stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I'll say, feel free not to spoil the book, because everybody should go check out Sam Julien's Guide to Tiny Experiments. But as somebody who starts a lot of projects that most don't get finished, what is the secret to actually finishing it?
I think the secret is the feedback loop, having a really tight feedback loop of like, I'm going to do this thing for a certain amount of time, and I'm going to be really clear in knowing whether I'm successful or not. So I'm going to write on my blog consistently for 4 weeks. And my definition of success is that I wrote for 4 weeks, you know, and then I'm going to reassess. And that to me, like having a deadline, having boundaries around that, and then knowing whether I'm doing a good job is the key. Cause I think the hardest thing is like, I want to be a great writer, and like, okay, what does that mean? I'm going to write weekly forever, you know, like I'm going to write. And it's like, you can't, like, we can't really fathom that as humans, you know, like we can't really commit to like a lifelong thing, you know, cause it's just not realistic, you know. But if you say like, I really want to get better at writing, so I'm going to write every week for 8 weeks, and I'm going to have, you know, and then the next go around, you're going to be like, I'm going to write for 8 weeks, but I'm going to try to get my like viewership up or whatever, like get my traffic. I'm going to optimize more for SEO, and you can like build on that over time. But I think people underestimate the number of skills and habits they need for things. And so just reducing the scope and having like a nice feedback loop, I think are the keys. And that's basically what I just kind of detail out in the book.
Knowing when you're successful is so important, because you'll often go a long time without realizing you've been successful somewhere because you didn't set a metric at the beginning to know that you've made it and accomplished something.
Right.
Yeah. And also you mentioned getting into habits. That's one of the tricks that I do for myself, is to develop a new habit is hard. But what I've found is you can kind of piggyback on your existing habits. And so just something little like flossing. Growing up, I hated flossing. I never did it. And then I had a buddy in college that told me, floss before you brush. And I was like, huh, that seems backwards. And he's like, hear me out. You're always going to brush your teeth, right? And I was, of course. He's like, well, if you just force yourself to floss before you brush, then you'll also always floss your teeth. And something as simple as that has led to me flossing every day. And now I don't have to lie to my dentist. And so anytime I try and I want to do something, I always look around like, what habit can I bolt this onto until it becomes its own habit? And what do they say? 21 days to form a habit? 31 mm-hmm. days?
I think 21.
True, but yeah, just remembering to do something like flossing before you're brushing enough, and then it becomes very normal. And now it feels weird when I don't floss.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a great book called Tiny Habits by BJ Fogg. And he has an email course that is actually really, really good that's on the site. But he goes into that as well, like how to build habits and how to add them to existing habits and define them and stuff. And yeah, habits are a really crucial part of that. I always find for those, if I can get through like day 4 of doing it, I have a much higher chance of succeeding. For some reason, like right around day 3 or day 4 is when is the first opportunity to forget or mess up. And so if I can make it through that, then I can make it to a week. And then if I can make it to a week, I can make it to 2 weeks. And then after that, it starts to become a real habit.
I love it. And it almost feels like having Sam on the show is becoming a habit because
hey,
you've had you on before and hopefully we'll have you on again, Sam. Thank you so much for joining us this week, sharing your wisdom. Folks, do check out 8bits.tv. You can find all of the previous episodes. You can go find Sam's episode. You can subscribe to our newsletter so you know when the new episodes come out. Sam, again, thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yay. Bye, y'all.
Bye.